You're listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 3. Powered by Scarborough Nissan. Driving satisfaction. It's Nissan's Winter Warrior event. Lease or finance from 0% or get up to $6,000 in standard rate finance cash on select models. Scarborough Nissan. Eglinton Avenue East at Warden.
All right, Trey Wingo of ESPN will join us in about 5 minutes. Start looking ahead to the championship series in the NFL. We still haven't played that audio either from Aaron Rodgers draft night. He's a Bay Area guy. He's a California guy anyway. And he was hoping to go first overall to San Francisco. They ended up taking Alex Smith.
Yeah, that's right.
And Rodgers dropped all the way into the 20s, and the Packers got him. And he's looking for some redemption on Sunday. Carlo Colaiacovo in here from First Up. I'm Brian Hayes. The Leafs in action tonight as well. Probably looking for some redemption against Calgary because, although you can't really blame Calgary, it was the Leafs that choked it away when they were in Calgary. Yeah, it wasn't like Calgary just came out and said, we're stealing this game. The Maple Leafs basically just said, take it. So they're going to try to clean that up. And Sheldon Keefe was talking about that today, having a meeting with his
leaders.
Leaders about defensive play.
Yeah.
Which was just a matter of time. Like, we were so focused when Keefe took the job on how different he is than Babcock, and he is, how he's going to treat the players, how the players feel about it, how he's about, he's all about puck position, possession, and maybe different systems. At some point, he was going to address what Babcock was addressing for 5 years. Well, we have to play better defensively.
And now more than ever, with Morgan Rielly out, they played a New Jersey team that doesn't play any good defense themselves. But I think now more than ever, especially with these two games left before a week-long break, you don't want to get into a run-and-gun game every night because you're putting more pressure on your defense that's hurting right now without Rielly and Muzzin, but put more pressure on Freddie too. And yeah, Freddie's going to have to step up and probably steal a game here in the next two. But if their focus becomes being better defensively, they're skilled enough that the offense is going to open up and come when it needs to come for them.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always said this, ever since Sheldon Keefe took over, they've been night and day different. But this team is night and day different when it plays with the lead and when it plays when it's trailing. Because when it plays with the lead, the teams are chasing them, which means they're exposed because they're changing their structure. But when this Maple Leafs team has to come back, they're exposing their defensive play by margins.
Right. They get cheating, man.
They get cheating they just get exposed.
Yeah, you're right. And, tonight's a challenge because Calgary's a good team, very beatable team. You're at home. We mentioned Matthews in the previous segment. He's got 34 goals on the season, 27 on home ice.
Yeah.
Which is just a remarkable split stat. A shocking stat.
It's incredible. But you want to hear an even more remarkable stat? Matthews leads the league in 5-on-5 goals at 111 over the last 4 years. McDavid has 108, and McDavid has played 31 more games than Matthews.
Right. No, he's the best 5-on-5 goal scorer in the league.
Right now he is.
Like, the stats indicate that. That's not an eye test. Hey, it looks like, I saw him score a couple when I was down at the building a few weeks ago. The stats indicate this guy is the best 5-on-5 goal scorer in hockey. Ovechkin sets up on the power play. Ovechkin scores on 5-on-5 as well.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right. Over the last 4 years or 3.5 years or whatever, McDavid's second in that category.
Yeah.
Which, that might be a bit surprising as well, because you don't think of him necessarily as a goal scorer.
31 more games, too?
Yeah. But, like, when you think of McDavid, you think of his skating ability, first and foremost, his playmaking ability. He scores goals, but he's not a guy that puts up 50-50-plus. Like, you don't seem to focus as much on his goal-scoring ability, yet he's doing it as well.
Yeah.
But Matthews is even better than him. And that's how good he is, and he hasn't been playing with Marner for the previous 200
games. You just hit it there. Playing with Mitch Marner is going to increase his goal totals even more.
Big time.
That's who Mitch Marner is. Like, Mitch Marner is an elite winger that makes his centerman better. Like, think about John Tavares. John Tavares, for how great of a career he's had scoring goals, had his career best season playing alongside Mitch Marner.
That's right. And throw Hyman into the mix. The style in which he plays. He doesn't have the playmaking ability. Marner is in a completely different category than anybody else on the team in terms of that trait and that ability. But Hyman opens up. Like, you're going to get some freebies when he's on the ice with you because he drags people in, and all of a sudden you're wide open.
He gets the puck.
He gets the puck, too. Yeah, like it's the perfect line for Matthews. And it's on Tavares. It's on William Nylander. It's on a third line that has, I think, a lot of potential if they stick with Johnsson, Kerfoot, and Kapanen. And I think they're likely going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is a scenario where Andreas Johnsson lost his job due to injury. He got injured
all the time.
And he came back and he's like, I'm on the third line now. I was riding shotgun with 34 before I got injured. I don't think he's getting that job back.
Not anytime soon if Engvall keeps playing the way he is.
And Engvall deserves to be playing where he's 100%.
Playing. 100%.
Engvall has legitimately fought his way into a position where he deserves to play those kind of minutes.
I actually like Engvall a lot.
I really like him. Noodles was on here yesterday, and Noodles is always around the rinks. He's calling games. He said, I've had multiple people from multiple teams unprovoked say that Pierre Engvall is a good player.
Yeah.
Like, the word is out. He can play.
And that's a good thing for the Leafs. Like, you know, we talked about this the other day about, you know, the Leafs potentially going out and making trades, whether it's for a defenseman or a backup. Sometimes when injuries happen, it opens up opportunities for other guys, and it also exposes other guys like a Johnsson or a Kapanen to be trade assets because you've got Engvall as a younger, cheaper option that could fill that same role.
You got to have someone that's going to fill the role.
Right? And right? I'm not advocating trade Johnsson or Kapanen, but they're going to have to do something.
Something's going to happen at some point. Championship weekend in the NFL. Niners at home against Green Bay, Kansas City at home against Tennessee. To tee it up, we're joined now by longtime member of ESPN, member of the morning show on Golic and Wingo. Here's Trey Wingo back on Overdrive. What's up, Trey?
How are we, people?
We're doing very well. We're excited for a big weekend. And I'm looking at the Packer game. I think that's more compelling because of the history between these two teams. Aaron Rodgers not getting picked first overall, being a California guy. How compelling is that game for you, Trey?
Well, for me, they're both compelling because I'm a football idiot. I mean, I love everything about the game. So that one's interesting because you have someone in Aaron Rodgers who obviously is going to walk in as a first ballot Hall of Famer with a chance to get to only his second Super Bowl in his career against a 49ers defense that has just absolutely smothered people all year long. And you know, they did meet in November, and it was a blowout. San Francisco won that one 37-8, but I think the Green Bay Packers did some things in that game that really put them behind the eight ball early in the way their game plan was assessed, and I hope they don't do that again, because if they do that again, I think the result will be the same. I think they need to be a little more aggressive on first and second down instead of just running into that front seven and trying to get a couple of yards. You want to try and maybe avoid as many third downs as possible by getting 5 yards on first down and 5 yards on second down. And I think if they do that, it'll be a closer game. But all that being said, I still like San Francisco in that contest.
Yeah, I mean, San Francisco, I think they deserve that top seed, even though Seattle was obviously knocking on the door like we know. But for me, they've been the most consistent, dominant, deepest team in the NFC all year. But, you know, it's funny how a week like this starts to bring to the surface some different conversations, some different narratives, including the pass rush for the Packers. And I've noticed a few people in the football world suggesting that Za'Darius Smith is actually the most dominant defensive player in this game based on the way he's currently been playing. Would you agree with that statement?
Well, you could certainly put him on the very, very short list of the most important and impactful free agents signings was made this offseason. He and Preston Smith both came over from Washington and Baltimore, and he's been great. I mean, the Packers, let's be honest, the Packers are where they are mostly because of their defense, not because of what Aaron Rodgers and that offense has done. The defense has been by far the more consistent unit of the two. So, yes, Smith is right up there.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's been outstanding. That's obviously a rarity for the Packers. They never got into free agency, and they did, and they connected on both guys. But I look at that Niners defense, and Nick Bosa is a beast.
You think about how Nick Bosa ended up in San Fran. Jimmy Garoppolo tore his ACL, and he was actually commenting on it today. Like, it was a blessing in disguise for him tearing his ACL because it allowed him to get Nick Bosa.
They dropped.
And they both entered the league the next year at the same time.
And it's set up beautifully.
4-12, I believe, was what got him Nick Bosa. And it's interesting because, you know, the Niners have sort of made a habit, if, for lack of a better term, if you will, about drafting defensive linemen and edge rushers, whether it's DeForest Buckner, Arik Armstead, Solomon Thomas, who's more of an interior guy, and now Bosa. And quite frankly, that's the strength of their team now, and that really helps that secondary, as does Richard Sherman. But as you guys all know, you tie that pass rush together, the way they can get after the quarterback, and every secondary is going to look good.
With Trey Wingo.
What do you take, or what's your take on the other matchup with the Tennessee Titans and the KC Chiefs? I mean, if you listen to Tyreek Hill comments coming out today, basically saying that nobody can stop them.
I know. Bulletin board
is
material.
Is that bulletin board material for a Titans team that, if you really look at them, they're the hottest team coming in right now. They beat the number one offense in Baltimore and the number one scoring defense in New England. And the last two times that's happened in NFL history, those two teams won the Super Bowl.
Yeah, and they're on a roll. There's no question. And it started, actually, for them in the regular season contest in Week 11 when they beat the Chiefs. That was the Chiefs' last loss. They've won seven straight games since then. I'm not a big believer in bulletin board material, because if you can't get up to play for a game that'll get you to the Super Bowl, then you probably should be putting on a uniform anyway. So people can say whatever they want. And now, if it fires back after them, you can certainly call them out for it, and you deserve it because you won the game. Look, Derrick Henry's been phenomenal. And if he runs for 150 yards on Sunday, he'll be only the second running back in NFL history with at least 150 yards in four straight games. The other one's Earl Campbell, which is really interesting, because if you're looking for an historical comp to what Derrick Henry is, I think Earl Campbell would be a really good one. But, you know, I do believe a couple of things here. At some point, even as big and strong as Derrick Henry is, you just can't keep feeding him that many times. I mean, he ran for, what, 211 in Week 17 against the Texans to help get him into the postseason. Then he ran for 188 against the Patriots and 190 last week. Here's the whole problem as I see it for the Titans, is that they win one way, which is eat the time, long, long drives, score with consistency when you get into the red zone. But the Chiefs don't care about that at all. As we saw last week, they were down 24 to nothing, and they had the lead by the end of the half. I mean, that's they went into the second quarter, they were down 24 to nothing in the second quarter, and they came back to have the lead at the half, which had never happened before.
Yeah, mind-blowing.
They scored on scored touchdowns on seven straight drives. That had never happened before. They scored on eight straight drives. I mean, you guys watch basketball. The Chiefs went on a 51-7 run. I mean, that's a college basketball score against, you know, directional Michigan in the preseason. That's not a playoff game in the NFL. So the Titans have one way to win. The Chiefs have, which I believe, several ways to win. Now, that doesn't mean the Titans can't win, but the way Mahomes is playing now, he was also the leading rusher in that game, Patrick Mahomes, the Chiefs quarterback. The time that they played the regular season, he did throw for 446 and three touchdowns, but it was his first game coming back from the dislocated kneecap. He is running free and easy right now, and when it's all said and done, I believe the second year in a row they're hosting the AFC Championship game. They finally figured out that Arrowhead is a plus for them, where they lost eight straight home games before they won, you know, two over the last couple of years. I think they're going to get there this year.
With Trey Wingo of ESPN and ESPN Radio. All right, let's put the cart before the horse. Let's say Tennessee does beat Kansas City on Sunday. Monday, if your producer comes to you and goes, Trey, you got to rank the shock value of the three wins so far in the playoffs for Tennessee, New England, Baltimore, and Kansas City, how would you expect to be ranking those?
Honestly, I think I would. The Ravens would be number one. The least likely, surprising to me, would be the Patriots, because you know the Patriots have been very limited offensively all year long. I actually picked the Titans to win that game,
okay. Just
because I didn't think New England had a lot going on there. And then it would be the Chiefs after that. The Ravens. I mean, the Titans have to have the lead, right? That they have to do that, the Chiefs don't need the lead, as we saw last week. I mean, they're okay if they fall behind, because they believe eventually that guy, Mahomes, is going to figure it out. And there were two key injuries to watch this week. Travis Kelce, who injured his hamstring a little bit in that divisional round win over the Texans, he has not practiced yet this week. He came back into the game, but he has not practiced yet. And the other one is Chris Jones, the defensive lineman, who missed that game against the Texans. And they could really use him to help slow things down against Derrick Henry in the middle, because Chris Jones is probably their best overall defender. He's more of a pass rusher than a run stopper, but he's a giant body And if nothing else, he'll hold up until the cavalry can get there if he's allowed to play with that calf injury.
So the Browns, as we know, are not playing this weekend, but Odell Beckham Jr. is in the news cycle. Him handing out
cash—shocking
that he would want to find a way into the spotlight. Him handing out cash affects—it doesn't affect the Browns. I don't see—they don't care about that. Why would they care about that? But a warrant for his arrest being issued, that will likely concern the Browns. Where do you see that relationship going? Odell Beckham Jr., Cleveland, the NFL, his future. Where is this heading for you, Trey?
Listen, it's a great question with Cleveland because there have been issues all along. And, you know, he was asked about that in the season, and his response was, well, I'm not going to talk about that. He could have said the Bill Belichick thing. Or, he could have said, I'm really happy. You know, I love being here, all that kind of stuff, which eventually he did. But it was like, oh, I should have said that the first time. So this is why I have to say it now. And the stuff that went on in the national championship game, there's really two sides to everything. We all like to draw a line in the sand and say, this is what this is and this is what it isn't. Look, was it the smartest thing he ever did to hand out cash to players who might be eligible? No, but it's not the worst thing either. And, like, the thing with the cop, I don't know if you've seen the video where he slaps that guy's butt on the backside.
Yeah.
Was that the smartest thing to do to an officer who's trying to do something? No. But to me, I don't look at that and say, I mean, yes, legally, by the definition of the term, it is assault. But really, I mean, it seems like that cop might have been a Clemson fan. I don't know. I mean, I'm not excusing him for doing it because there's really, quite frankly, being charged is the least of your amount of your problems. Normally when you slap a police officer, right? Normally there are cuffs that come out in some way, shape, or form when you have a physical altercation with a cop. It wasn't the most aggressive thing, no, but it was also completely unnecessary.
Great stuff as always, Trey. We'll do it again down the road. Thank you, buddy.
You got it, guys. Take care.
Thanks, Trey.
Trey Wingo from ESPN and ESPN Radio.
You want to hear a surprising stat about the Tennessee Titans?
Mm-hmm.
In week 16, they signed kicker Craig Joseph, I believe his name is.
Okay.
He hasn't attempted a field goal since they signed him. It's like every time the Titans get into the red zone, they're scoring touchdowns.
That is incredible. Touchdown or punt?
Yeah.
Like, that's it, I guess. Because they don't turn the ball over either.
Don't.
Tannehill doesn't throw it enough. But Tannehill's numbers were very good all year. Like, when he took over, ever since he took over, he has put up, like, his touchdown to interception ratio is 3-1 or 4-1. His quarterback rating, like, is way up there. Might have led the league the final 7 or 8 weeks of the year.
Right. Yeah.
So he's being labeled the manager, and you understand why, because there's so much focus on Henry and the defense. But Tannehill, like, last week was a perfect example. He threw two touchdowns on 88 yards, but they were dimes.
Yeah.
And then he's like, I don't have to do anything. No. Guess what? Garoppolo didn't either. Garoppolo, he connected on 11 passes. 11 completions, and they won running away, just like Tennessee, because they handed the ball off and the defense was stout.
Controlled the game.
You
know, we were talking to Ed Werder this morning on First Up, and he said, you know, last year, the final four teams, it was the top four offensive teams in the league. And this year, you're seeing a different landscape where the San Francisco 49ers and the Tennessee Titans are a run-first offense. You don't see that very often with the game. The way the game has changed now, but they're dominating possession of the ball because they're controlling the running game.
Right. Well, it's a copycat league, and it'll be interesting to see which teams decide to copy which philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're right, Tennessee, this is a throwback, man. They are mean. They are defensively stout. They run the ball.
Yeah.
Like, no one wants to talk about the importance of a running back. It is such a devalued position, and it has turned into that. Analytically, due to injuries, all that kind of stuff.
Quarterback play,
run and gun, exactly. But look at Derrick Henry. Try stopping the guy. And play defense like that. Good luck.
Yeah.
You know, so you're right.
And I think that's
the Niners in Tennessee
game.
Are very similar. I hope, selfishly, the Packers get through. But from an entertainment value, Packers-Kansas City is a perfect Super Bowl. Like, it's outstanding. Aaron Rodgers against Mahomes, where they're so similar in the way they play. Like, Mahomes is what Rodgers was 10 years ago, 12
Basically,
years ago.
Yeah.
Like, mobile in the pocket, unbelievably creative players, arm strength, can throw dimes that other players just simply cannot throw.
I think from an NFL perspective, that's what you're hoping for.
Yeah.
Think of the marquee names you're promoting.
It's perfect.
It's Patrick Mahomes, the face
yeah.
of the NFL, against Aaron Rodgers, the guy who was the face of the NFL before.
Yep. Yeah. And a big team, big public team in Green Bay. Not that the Niners aren't. The Niners are, you know, they're a public team as well. But you get Andy Reid in there. I mean, there'd be a... I think if it were Niners, Tennessee, and that's a possibility, we're down to four teams, it's not like people aren't going to watch, and there won't be compelling storylines, and at least you've got some fresh blood. Like, New England's not back in there. Yeah,
thank God.
Yeah, it's a totally different conversation for 2 weeks leading up to the game. If you want, like, craziness, potentially 45-41, you need Green Bay, Kansas City.
Absolutely.
But for them to get there, they're probably going to have to grind through this week.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, and play mean and play tough and play big.
Whatever you got to do. But it got me thinking, the Super Bowl this year is in Miami. If you're a Miami Dolphins fan and you have to watch Ryan Tannehill quarterback the Tennessee Titans in a Super Bowl game in your own stadium, talk about the ultimate kick in the nuts. They booted him out of there.
Right. Get out of here.
And he's a guy who's totally revived his career in Tennessee.
Yep. You're right. I mean, Miami.
Think about that.
And furthermore, like, Miami, I'm sure they were thinking through week 5, 6, we're a lock for the first overall
pick.
Yeah.
Then they started winning games.
Now they're picking fifth. Like, why would you win games?
I don't get it.
What are you doing winning games?
Yeah.
And they did. They won just enough games where maybe Tagovailoa is the guy they're going to take if he's still on the board.
Yeah.
But.
You think Tua is going to be a top pick still?
I'm not as convinced as
I don't
other
think
people
he,
are.
I don't know anything. I don't think he's going to be a top 10 pick.
I'd be very concerned about his injury.
Of course.
Like, he's always injured, but you I think he dislocated his hip.
Yeah.
Man, you do that, you are potentially damaged goods for the rest of your career.
Yeah.
And if you're going to invest a top 5 pick on him, especially if you're a team that feels like you're not going to be great next year, because Trevor Lawrence is coming up in a year.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I'd be careful.
I'd be very careful. I got this feeling that Tua is going to end up as a Patriot.
That would be wild.
First round pick on Tua.
I don't think he'd get past Oakland, who I guess will be Vegas, because I think they have 2 picks in the first round.
Yeah, the Bears.
And then you can almost not waste a pick. But because you've got another first, there's a chance you look at it and like, we can't pick 2 players and miss on this guy if he stays healthy and turns into the next Drew Brees or something like that. But him ending, I wouldn't be shocked if Belichick tried to move up and try to get him.
I wouldn't be either.
Wouldn't that be incredible?
With all this Brady talk on where he might play.
Yep.
And the other thing about the Brady talk is, like, you see Julian Edelman got arrested on the weekend?
Yep.
It just makes you wonder if Julian Edelman's sort of paving the way for him to get out of New England, too. Like, think about Julian Edelman has never, ever got into any trouble in New England. Now all this talk about, you know, Brady possibly leaving. He's under contract with the Patriots. Now he gets caught getting arrested.
Well, it would be one hell of a plan. Like, I'm going to get arrested. Please hold it against me. Cut me, and I'm going with my guy. But it'll be a weird vibe around there if Brady ends up walking. And Edelman's 100%. A perfect example. Like, Gronkowski, I don't know if Gronk is ever coming back now.
Why would you, man? Like, Luke Kuechly retired at 29 years old the other day.
Exactly. I wouldn't. He's got all the money in the world. He already signed a deal with Fox. He's still going to make millions for the rest of his life because of the brand that he's built up. But if he did ever think, I got a passion, I want to come back, it's got to be with Brady. Like, I don't think Gronk is coming back to play with Jameis Winston. You know what I mean? Like, I just don't see it. I think he's going to be like, if I come back, I'm connected with this guy.
He's connected to the hip with him.
Yeah.
I don't see Gronk coming back.
I don't think so either.
Where's the motivation? The guy's got 3 rings.
Yeah.
He escaped. You know, he had a lot of injuries, but he says he feels really good. He looks really good. He's got money invested in that cannabis company that he's with.
He's going into the Hall of Fame.
He's got a great gig with Fox Sports.
It's over already. Like, it's all good.
Enjoy it, man.
Yeah, if I were him, I'd never come back.
Because he took a beating when he played.
Yep.
Absolute beating.
Mm-hmm. And he handed out beatings, too, sometimes. Like, just trying to tackle that dude. It's like George Kittle now. Like, Kittle on Sunday, that is going to be a problem for Green Bay. Although he didn't even factor in. He blocks. He's an unbelievable blocking tight end. So he did play a primary role in that win last week. But I think he had three catches for like 18 yards.
Yeah.
Like they won big, and George Kittle did not factor in whatsoever.
Well, they got the lead, and they went with their strength. They ran the ball. They ran it right down their throat, and their third down pass rush on Kirk Cousins just was unstoppable.
Yep. It's a perfect game plan.
Yeah.
It worked out beautifully.
I'm excited for this weekend, man.
I can't wait to go.
Have you guys done your picks yet, you and O?
No, we haven't.
So how does it work now?
It's a good question. I guess Al's brother will probably get dragged into all of it. And I don't know. I guess we'll do that tomorrow. But maybe I think I should be with Al's brother tomorrow. He is due. I think he's going 2-0 this weekend.
That would be awesome if you take Al's brother and you sweep O-Dog.
I think that's what has to happen, right? Like, it has to be me and Al's brother. And Al's brother is going to get on a heater. I guarantee you
The buzzers. The Dr. Ho. Yes, because O is going to be... just electric shocking Al's brother.
The old Jose Altuve shock. The Bregman shock.
Oh, man.
Curveball coming. You're getting shocked.
Yeah, there's some crazy stuff coming out on Twitter now from some of these baseball players.
All right, let's come back and kind of recalibrate, and we'll tell you more about what is buzzing online, literally and figuratively, about what Houston may or may not have been doing during the cheating scandal. We'll tell you more about that next. All right, don't forget, only 2 weeks left to win a spot on TSN 1050 Superfan Spring Break, an ultimate hockey vacation courtesy of our friends at BookSeats.com. Join Toronto as they take on Tampa and Florida down in the Sunshine State, including round-trip flights, four nights accommodations, and tickets to both games. To enter, you follow us on Instagram at TSN 1050 and at BookSeats.com. At TSN 1050 and at BookSeats.com on Instagram, and go to TSN1050.ca for all the details. BookSeats.com, custom flight, hotel, and ticket packages to events around the world, simplifying the way fans travel. All right, here's Bob McKenzie, your Hockey Insider. What's up, Bob?
Hey, how you doing, boys?
We're doing pretty well. We've been talking about Matthew Perreault's comments from, I guess, last night or earlier today, where he took a pretty nasty elbow from Jake Virtanen, and I didn't like the elbow at all. I think it was a suspendable act. He wasn't happy about it, wasn't penalized. Here's what Perreault said about that incident and what he intends on doing about it in the future.
Like, I can't really protect myself there. If the league's not going to protect me, then I'm the smallest guy on the ice, so I can't really fight anybody. So the only thing I can do to defend myself is use my stick. So the next guy that does that to me is going to get my f***ing stick. And I better not get suspended for it.
What do you make of that comment, Bob?
Well, there's a lot of layers of the onion to peel back on this one. First off, let me say that I'm getting back on my hobby horse a little bit. I think any hit to the head, you penalty. I just think that. I think what we know now about head trauma, the direction the game's gone, and I understand that most players, coaches, managers feel otherwise, and they think it should be discretionary, and that sometimes you can have a real legal hit with contact to the head. So that's first and foremost what I would say. Second thing is, I'm assuming that the player safety decision to not suspend in this instance was because they believed that it was a full body-on-body hit, that most of the contact with Perreault's head was with the shoulder of Jake Virtanen. And yes, the elbow does come up, but I think they tried to break down, from what I understand, broke down the film as much as they could and saw that the real damage was done with the shoulder, but it was also in the motion of a full body-on-body hit. And as we know, and as I've said before, hitting somebody in the head in the NHL is not illegal as long as you go body on body and it's ruled incidental contact. The elbow coming up, you can debate back and forth whether that was it. From Matthew Perreault's perspective, what I would say is this. I don't know that any player in the NHL gets hit in the head as much as Matthew Perreault does, in two reasons for it, I think. One, he's not very big, so when there is contact, quite often the other player hitting him is gonna hit him in the head, taller players. Number two, he's fearless. He goes into spots where you're going to get hit a lot, and he has the puck a lot, and so that's bound to happen. As for his comment, two things I would say about that. When my kids played hockey and, you know, headshots started to become really prevalent, I told both of them, listen, if you think a guy's coming for your head, I said, you get your stick up and you do whatever's necessary to protect yourself, because it's better to get a 2, a 4, a 6, an 8, or a 10 game suspension than it is to get a concussion. And that's probably not the most politically correct thing to tell your kids when they play minor hockey or junior hockey, but I believed it. And in a manner of speaking, that's what Perreault was saying. Now, the problem with doing that at the National Hockey League level is that, you know, if he does do that, especially after saying that he's going to do it, A, he's going to get a big suspension, and B, there might be even further liability because you threatened to do something that is not considered within the bounds of the game, and then you went out and did it. So it could open a whole other can of worms for him, but I do sense his frustration. He's a, after everything I've said, go back to point A. In my world, if you hit a guy in the head, you got to be responsible for it, even if it's body on body.
Well, that's twice in less than a week we've heard a player say, okay, I'm going to do that, and I better not get suspended for it. Yeah. That's Perreault, and it's Cassian. Now, Cassian was talking about the Tkachuk hit, but it's getting murky here in the NHL. I'm not surprised because of where it's been going for quite some time. For the longest time, whether you believed in it, liked it, didn't like it, it didn't matter. The players felt like, I'm going to police it myself. In other words, if that happens, I am going to get my stick up. I am going to drop the gloves and fight. And the league was fine with it. The league basically was like, yeah, you guys figure it out, for the most part, unless it was egregious. Now, the league is trying to send a message, no, we'll police it, we'll stop it. But then when you get incidents where the players are sitting there looking at the league to do something and they don't, you get mass confusion. And that kind of feels like where we're at right now, Bob.
Well, what I would say is there's a distinction between what Cassian said and what Perreault said. And the distinction is pretty obvious to me. That is, Zach Cassian saying, okay, they explained to me that what Matthew Tkachuk did is a legal body check. So if that's legal, then I'm going to do that to him. So Zach Cassian wasn't threatening to break the rules and exact retribution. He was saying, hey, he's going to hit me like that, and I can't drop the gloves and beat him up, and I'll get a two-game suspension for that, which I did, then I'm going to hit him exactly the same way he hit me. And you know what? There's nothing wrong with that so long as he does it and stays within the rules. If he doesn't, then it becomes problematic. And it's not easy to make those hits Matthew Tkachuk makes and not hit the guy in the head, but Tkachuk managed to do it on both occasions that he hit him. As far as what Perreault said, I mean, it's pretty blatant. You're not allowed in any world to take your stick and swing it at somebody's head. And if you do that, you're either going to get a suspension, or if it was flagrant enough, you might get arrested. So, you know, there's a big distinction between the two, I think. But to your point, there's no question that there are a lot of players around the National Hockey League don't like the Matthew Tkachuk hit. But the league looked at it and said, you know what, it's perfectly legal.
Bob, what about the incident that happened the other night, which we're seeing, you know, the result of it now with Tuukka Rask heading to the IR when playing Columbus, the forward Emil Bäckström skates across the crease, punches him in the head. You know, what's the conversation around that?
Well, see, you said he punched him in the head. I don't know if he punched him in the head. I know he hit him in the head.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know whether it was intentional. I don't know whether it was accidental. I don't know whether it was accidentally on purpose. And obviously the fact that, to my knowledge, we didn't hear anything today on a hearing for Emil Bäckström. So I'm going to assume that they took it as, now he was skating through the crease and he was a little careless and he hit Rask in the head. Again, I'll go back to the very first premise I started with. Doesn't matter to me. He hit him in the head. He concussed him. Got to be responsible for that. And again, most people in hockey, and I say most, because there's a lot of fans and media who feel the same way that I do. And listen, I've gone full circle on this. Back in the early days of when Rafi Torres was getting a lot of suspensions for hits to the head or not getting a lot of suspensions for hits to the head, back in 2004, 2005, where headshots were the big thing and Rule 48 was just brand new, I was very much on a soapbox saying, listen, you hit a guy in the head, it's got to be a penalty. There's no rationalizing brain trauma. You can't do it. And then over time, I kind of got sick of probably being a one-trick pony and feeling like I was the health and welfare minister for the National Hockey League. And I just decided, you know what? If the players who play the game and the coaches who coach it and the managers who manage it and the owners who own it, if they don't want to make the rule changes, well, then you know what, guys? Not necessarily literally, but possibly literally, knock yourself out. And I kind of got off that. And the more I look at it lately and everything we've seen with CTE and head trauma and so many things, I'm just back to thinking, you know what, this is not a good strategy. This is not a good end game. You know, punish hits to the head. no matter what. The same as you punish an accidental high stick, punish an accidental hit to the head, and try to make the players more aware of the importance of not hitting people in the head. And some people think that's the rocky road or the slippery slope to zero contact in the game. Mm. I think the players will adapt, but that's just my own personal viewpoint.
Always appreciate it, Bob. We'll do it again soon. Thank you.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
Bob McKenzie, our TSN Hockey Insider. Maple Leafs, Calgary tonight down at Scotiabank. We'll come back, tee that up, get to our best bets brought to you by Proline. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. All right, time now for our best bets brought to you by Proline. Looking at the NHL board, I'm going to go over the number in the Maple Leaf game tonight. I know they were talking about...
What is it?
6.5. I see a 4-3, 5-3 game tonight. I just do. I mean,
I like that.
Freddie Anderson, I hope for his sake I'm wrong, because he's got to get back into a rhythm.
Yeah.
Especially before the break. You know, even if they win the next two games, he's going to be happy, and ultimately that's why you play. But if he gives up like 8 goals in the next two games, but they win both of them, I don't think he's going to be
feeling
ecstatic.
Because he's going to the All-Star game too, right?
Right, exactly. And his numbers have been very bloated. Like, he has not played well.
Yeah.
So get on a roll here. I hope I'm wrong, but I don't really expect it tonight. I think
maybe
they're going to score.
6-1 game Leafs.
There you go.
Hey,
that's always positive thinking. I like it. I'm on Florida at home against L.A., and I think Vegas will get that bump, that Peter DeBoer bump tonight in Ottawa.
It's the trend. Every time you fire a coach, you always bet on the team that's playing the next night with their new coach, because it's, like you said, it's the bump.
And you're playing Ottawa, Mark Stone back in Ottawa for the first time.
That might be a lock, actually.
Feels pretty good. Throw down 20, you can score 70. You can find my picks on Twitter at TSN 1050 Radio and get way into the game with Proline. It's the sports betting game that lets you turn small wagers into big excitement. Proline, get way into the game. So, I would assume tomorrow on First Up, you guys will be talking about the Leaf game, of course, and teeing up the Raptor game and the NFC and AFC championship game, but... probably the Houston Astros stuff will come up with the boys.
Oh, 100%.
Because
this is getting
pretty
crazy now. Like, apparently Scott Boras, who is Jose Altuve's agent, when this came out, Altuve contacted Boras and said, "I want to issue this statement that I have never worn an electronic device in my performance as a major league player."
So he's going down with the ship. That's it. And he's entitled to that defense. He
That's
is innocent until proven guilty, but there is so much smoke online, different videos that are out there. This all started with some anonymous Twitter handle who claimed to be the niece of Carlos Beltran.
Who's decided to part ways today without even managing a game.
Right. Beltran's already out. Hired by the Mets, already out. And they issued a statement saying they mutually agreed to part ways, but now it sounds like there are reports out there indicating Beltran did not want to leave. So basically, New York said, you've got to go, man.
We don't need this.
Yeah, we don't need it. You're out. And
we know where this is going. Ultimately, you're going to get caught guilty, and we don't want to be attached to it.
I think it's the right move. Like, Now, they may have to pay him. Could you imagine you got to pay him his full managerial contract, and he doesn't even get to spring training? But some Twitter handle, alleging to be the niece of Carlos Beltran, tweeting out that, "I'm told to stay quiet, but I refuse to. Jose Altuve and Bregman wore devices that buzzed on inside right shoulder from hallway video guy." And then Trevor Bauer, who's been in the league for a long time, great pitcher, he tweets out, quote tweets that, and says, "I've heard this from multiple parties too, for what it's worth."
Wow.
Now,
and he's coming out and denying it.
And Altuve's coming out and denying it, and there's a bunch of players. Gary Sheffield Jr., who I guess is Sheffield's kid, brings up an interesting conspiracy theory about that anonymous Twitter handle that claimed to be the niece of Beltran, because Beltran came out through the media and said, "I don't know who that is.
Yeah.
She's not my niece." Gary Sheffield Jr. believes that it's actually a player in the league who's like, "I'm not going to put my name on it," but basically a Kevin Durant burner account. And it's some player who's saying, "This is what's going on, man."
Sewer ball right now, man.
It is wild. And, okay, Altuve's saying it didn't happen. All right? You're innocent until proven guilty. And baseball did their investigation, and they came out and said, "We didn't find anything on devices." But now there is smoke out there.
This is going to get ugly.
Tracking videos, finding pictures. And
Mike Trout is trending on Twitter, too.
Well,
basically saying that he uses HGH for a thyroid loophole.
That was, Brocious, his son? Like, this is where I'm I want to be careful here because, you know, we're talking about kids of players or managers or third base coaches. Like, you don't know Mike Trout.
Yeah.
And at this point, you really can throw anything out there and people are going to believe it because of how poorly it has been handled by baseball and by Houston. And this belief that Rob Manfred, the commissioner of baseball, has effectively told all his people, that's it, shut up, stop talking about it.
It's over.
If you say that, why are you telling people to shut up unless you think they might
reveal more?
Yeah. Exactly. Like, what are you so fearful of? So when you put up a front, like, you know, we got to bury this, well, what are you burying?
Yeah.
So you could say anything and say, I'm hearing this is happening, and people would be like, yeah, I could see that. Because everyone was so untruthful, and everyone was like, no, we didn't do anything. Yeah, okay, you got us.
You got us, yeah.
You got us on it. So, I don't know.
I'm interested to see how this all plays out, man. It's
not over yet.
No way. It's just starting.
Yeah, and baseball's naive to believe that it is over. Well, we did the investigation.
The power of social media, man.
Let's see what else.
The power of social media. Somebody wants to hide behind a screen or even attach their name to it.
Well,
they got to lose.
And spring training begins in like a month. And Houston, Boston, and the Mets do not have a manager. The three of them do not have a manager.
Well, Houston might have one.
I think John Gibbons is going to get that job. Well, do you agree with that?
You brought up a great point. He's the perfect guy for the job because he'll just, I don't know what's going on. I don't believe in any of that stuff.
You hear Gibby laugh, you're like, you're off the hook.
You're stuck on that one for tonight, will you?
Because, honestly, he is the anti-analytical, video, cutting edge, listening to the front office type of manager.
He just sits in the dugout during the game and just mows down on those sunflowers.
That's him. Listen, he's a good manager, too. It's not like he can't manage.
Yeah.
But nobody would believe that John Gibbons was setting up some technologically advanced system around the corner and using it to cut an edge. And he is so likable. He's so affable. Yeah. He's from the state of Texas.
Makes sense.
It's perfect. If you're in an HR or PR disaster, which Houston is right now, John Gibbons makes all the sense in the world.
You're absolutely right, man.
So, and he's reportedly getting an interview. I'll bet I wouldn't be surprised at all if he got that job. All right, buddy. Good seeing you, man.
Great seeing you, too, man. Great being on the show.
Always awesome having you in here.
Yeah.
We'll catch you tomorrow at 6 a.m. with Michael Landsberg on First
Early
Up.
Morning.
Enjoy yourself. Good man. Noodles will be back tomorrow. The O-Dog as well. We are out of here. We're back tomorrow at 4 p.m.
We'll chat then.
Scarborough Nissan is one of the largest volume Nissan dealers in the GTA. Happy New Year from everyone at Scarborough Nissan. Safety first. Please remember, don't drink and drive. The Winter Warrior Sales event is on now. Take advantage of lease and finance rates as low as 0% APR on select models OAC or up to $6,000 standard rate finance cash on select models. Scarborough Nissan, driving satisfaction. Visit them on Eglinton Avenue East at Warden Avenue. Visit ScarboroughNissan.com. You've been listening to the Overdrive Podcast Hour 3, powered by Scarborough Nissan, driving satisfaction. It's Nissan's Winter Warrior event. Lease or finance from 0% or get up to $6,000 in standard rate finance cash on select models. Scarborough Nissan, Eglinton Avenue East at Warden.